I'm Alex Lee, and welcome to the official Story Factory podcast series. The Story Factory is a centre for young people to visit, where crazy stories and weird, wild fantasies are created. Also, sometimes the Story Factory goes out and visits students like you. These podcasts have been created to showcase some of the most awesome stories the students have written during the 5 years that we have been open. They were going to do that. Except my brother took my microphone to camp. Super annoying. Yes, I was advised that storing my microphone in a packet of marshmallows might not be the greatest idea, but it was the softest place I could find. Anyway, now my mic is probably being toasted over a fire in the middle of the bush. Actually, let's tune in and find out just what's going on. I think I left it on. That? Did you hear it? It was like quackle quackle snap, woo, skitter skitter, whoosh, pop.
Well, there might have been several things making noises one after another. I wish I hadn't walked off alone to get more firewood.
I wish I hadn't had seconds at dinner. Did you eat any of those sausages? They were weird.
I brought my own dinners to camp. I brought everything. My own snacks, my own mosquito repellent, my own memory stories to keep me entertained and not scared of the dark.
Oh, for real? That's amazing. Tell me a story. Not because I'm afraid of the dark or anything, but just because, hey, who doesn't like a story?
Okay. Here's one. It starts like this. Suddenly, in the Zeppelin factory, lights go out.
Suddenly, in the Zeppelin factory, the lights go out. Somebody yells, "Don't worry, it's just a blackout." Then the lights turn on and everything is normal. Children get back to work. But when the first child puts their hand near the machine, it gets sucked in. The machine's purpose is to inflate and deflate the Zeppelin's bladder. At this time, the machine was trying to deflate a Zeppelin. Blood was squirting everywhere. When they finally pull the hand out, it's a mangled mess. Jeremy was in shock, even though it wasn't his hand that was caught. He felt terrified, but he had to at least find out who had sabotaged the machine. After the accident, the factory was shut down. "But where will we work?" said Jeremy in a panic. "You won't work anywhere, kid," said one of the factory directors. Jeremy, who was now homeless, decided to go back to the slums and stay there till nightfall. When night came, he snuck back into the factory. It was almost pitch black. "Man, this place is spooky," muttered Jeremy. Suddenly, a grey cat with very large yellow eyes leapt at Jeremy's face. The strange thing about this cat was that as it attempted to scratch Jeremy's eyes out of their sockets, it was yelling in a very high-pitched voice, "Eat me!" "Why?" yelled Jeremy back in a very reasonable voice. "Get off him, you stupid cat," said a female voice. The very strange cat jumped off Jeremy's face. Now that he was able to see, Jeremy looked in the direction of the voice and saw the strangest girl. She had short brown hair, but the strangest thing about her was her clothes. She had a cloak that shimmered like water. Her name was Ruby. Jeremy didn't know this yet, but Ruby was a time-travelling magician. "There you are!" The prophecy cat winked at Jeremy and jumped up into Ruby's arms. "Who are you?" asked Jeremy. "A surprisingly lonely magician," replied Ruby. "Magician? What's a magician?" asked Jeremy. Then he narrowed his eyes. "Are you the person who sabotaged the machine?" "Oh, that," said Ruby nonchalantly. "How dare you!" yelled Jeremy in a fury. "So what? One of the elders asked me to do it," said Ruby, who was stroking her cat. "Apparently there was a kid in there whose very existence threatened the magicians. His name is Jeremy." Jeremy knew he had to act, but before he could, Ruby's cat jumped at him, turning to stone as it fell through the air. When it hit the ground, it was a huge stone sphinx. "What the hell is that?" said Jeremy. "Answer my riddle or cease to be," said the cat/sphinx in the same stupid high-pitched voice. "What is your riddle?" asked Jeremy. "I never was. Am always to be. No one ever saw me or ever will, and yet I am the confidence of all who live and breathe. What am I?" Jeremy was so overwhelmed with what had happened in the last 5 minutes that he simply yelled out the place he most wanted to be right now. "Future!" yelled Jeremy. "Correct!" said the cat slash sphinx. It held out its stone paw, and lying there was a stopwatch on a gold chain. This stopwatch was actually an item that was able to send whoever held it back in time. Jeremy pressed the little button on the top and the glass face opened up. He randomly pushed the hands around. He twisted them back to one day earlier. In a flash of light, he was gone. Back now, 5 minutes before the disaster happened, Jeremy stood in his place in the factory line and quietly snuck away when the factory director wasn't looking. He snuck up some metal stairs. But when his foot landed on the third step, it made a clanging sound that sounded to Jeremy like the boom of a town hall clock. He ducked down as the factory director looked up in his direction. He stepped forward to investigate, then thought better of it. Jeremy continued crawling up the stairs after the director turned away. When he reached the top, he saw Ruby with a spanner in her hand, preparing to shut down the lights. He leapt on top of her just before she could turn out the lights. "What the?" she exclaimed, just as Jeremy covered her mouth with his hand. "Go back to your own time," he snarled at her, and pressed the button on the stopwatch and adjusted the clock hands. And then he leapt off her just as the stopwatch began to glow. Then she disappeared with a flash of light, and that was that.
Wow, that was so cool! My turn. I have one for you. It's actually kind of terrifying.
Go for it, I can hack it.
It starts as Alex read his favorite comic book, Attack of the Chickens.
As Alex read his favorite comic book, Attack of the Chickens, he heard loud noises. A bark, bark, bark. Alex froze and looked out of his window. He saw giant chickens and people marching down the street. Oh, I forgot the chicken festival held once a year. It's almost as bad as Thanksgiving, he yelled. Alex ran outside, past the bench and through the park. He backed away from the chickens very slowly. Alex went back to his house. His mum was letting everyone, plus all the chickens, into the house. Alex ran upstairs, packed his bag for school, and jumped out of the window. For once, he actually wanted to go to school. When Alex got to school, Mrs. Henson was waiting. Mrs. Henson was a nasty lady who had mannerisms like a chicken. She also looked like a chicken, with her massive body and her skinny, bony chicken legs. She even had a gobble chin. Mrs. Henson wore lots of feathery layers and scarves. She also wore a wig that looked like a beehive, tall, yellow, and greasy. Alex didn't understand a thing the teacher was saying. He was horrible at English. He felt something in his pocket and pulled it out. It was the first ever kidnapping chicken comic. Alex kept reading and reading until he fell asleep. Captain Chickenslayer was attacking the chicken on a lifeboat with nothing but his bare hands. Suddenly, a wave hit the boat. Captain Chickenslayer flew off the boat. Splash! Alex woke up to the sound of a wave hitting the side of the building. All the desks were tipped over and paper was everywhere. And worst of all, Alex was floating. The water was getting higher. Finally, it reached the roof. He swam down, grabbed the blackboard which had fallen off the wall, and used it as a boogie board. The door burst open and Alex swam home. His mum was not home, so Alex ran upstairs to do his homework. After an hour or so, he heard his mum come in. But then he heard a bark, 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 bark. He froze and crept down the stairs. He saw three chickens running around the house. Alex's mum carried the chickens upstairs, so Alex ran downstairs to eat something out of the fridge. But all there was chicken, eggs, and turkey. Alex screamed. He slammed the fridge door in shock, and behind the door was a chicken staring him right in the face. Alex had had it. He couldn't do anything without chicken eyes watching him. He decided he was going to leave and go to Amethyst's house. Alex explained everything to Amethyst, how the chickens were out to get him. That's silly, said Amethyst doubtfully, but let him in anyway. Alex had not been in a chicken-free house for weeks. But then he saw little skinny legs walking down the stairs. Then came a plump body and lastly, a little head with an orange beak on the end. Amethyst had chickens. That wasn't part of the deal. Alex managed to avoid the chickens all evening. He slept for about 3 hours, but then he heard scurrying along the timber floorboards. He recognized the sound immediately. Bark, 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 bark. There it was, the chicken call. Amethyst chickens climbed onto the bed. Alex hid under the covers, but he fell off the bed with a thud. Chickens came charging at him. Then, out in the hallway, Alex saw some people in black. It was then he realized that the chickens weren't trying to kill him. They were trying to help him by waking him up to tell him that there were robbers in the house. The biggest robber stared Alex's way. The smallest chicken waddled out and plucked his only feather from his backside. The chicken clamped onto the robber's leg and climbed up. The robber was punching his legs and trying to get the chicken off. Finally, the chicken reached the man's face and tickled the robber's nose with the feather. The robber sneezed and did a backflip. The man ran away around the house with all the other robbers, and the chickens chased them around. The little chicken came up to Alex and pecked his foot. Alex just stared. You saved me. Alex wasn't very scared. The chicken was kind of cute. Alex stroked the chicken's neck and fed it some birdseed. He brought the chicken home, plus all of the chicken's family too. Now Alex had 20 chickens. Alex also gave one to Mrs. Henson, who started to be nice to him now that she had a pet. Now chickens were Alex's favourite animal.
You call that scary?
Yes.
Trust me, this one is scary. My name is Alira. I'm 16, I have long brown hair.
My name is Alira. I'm 16, I have long brown hair, brown eyes, I love to jog, and I live next to a haunted hotel. Because I started to hear so many scary noises from next door, my great-grandfather Pop told me about a story his great-grandfather told him from a very long time ago, 157 years ago in fact. His great-grandfather was called Rod. Rod was 57, tall, brave, smart. He had a patch over one eye, and the other eye was pretty scary. He carried a sword, and he was a ghost hunter. Rod had heard about a special ghost. Once Rod had tracked the ghost down, he booked into a haunted hotel. And because the room was haunted, he got it cheap. But what Rod didn't know was that the ghost he was looking for was actually the receptionist of the hotel, and her name was Elizabeth. Elizabeth was 40 and had worked at the hotel all her life until her death. After he booked in, Rod walked down the corridor to his room, put his bag down and locked the door. The curtains moved, but there was no wind as the windows were all closed. His bag kept moving and hitting his leg. So Rod tried to pick it up, but he couldn't, as it had become very heavy. He tried to open it and saw his ghost hunting gear. Rod managed to pull it all out, but then heard the sound of the reception desk bell. Things in the room started being thrown everywhere, pillows in one direction, the bed covering in the other. Suddenly, all the lamps blew out and Rod was pushed over. Then, a blurry figure seemed to appear and float around the room, going, "Ooh." It was Elizabeth. Rod was very brave and didn't get frightened. Elizabeth realized she wasn't scaring him. So she said in a low, deep voice, "Why aren't you terrified? Are you a ghost hunter?" "Yes," Rod answered, "and I want to know why you're still here." "I am Elizabeth, the receptionist. There was a big fire in this hotel. I ran away from it and tried to hide in a room. Unfortunately, they didn't find me and I burnt to death. Now I am stuck in the hotel, still waiting to answer the reception bell." Then she disappeared. Rod tried to track Elizabeth down using his super special ghost hunter device. Finally, he found her in one of the rooms. Elizabeth told him she wanted to get people on the street to come to her hotel so that she could scare them, because she was lonely. But Elizabeth couldn't leave the hotel. She was stuck. Rod agreed that he would try to help her. Rod was very clever, smart, and kind. He thought of a great idea. He told Elizabeth, "I'll find people who like to be scared and bring them to the hotel for you to frighten." He continued, "And there will always be someone from my family to help you." Elizabeth was excited and happy. She said, "As long as people come to my reception desk and tap on the bell, I will appear, book them in, and then scare them till they leave." Rod kept his word. He bought the house next door
And every generation, someone from our family has helped Elizabeth, Pop told me. So now that you can hear the scary noises but aren't frightened by them, it's your turn, he added. So that's why I went next door to the hotel. I rang the reception bell, and when Elizabeth appeared, I introduced myself to her. Hello, Elizabeth. I'm Alira, the next generation of Rod's family. Elizabeth smiled brightly at me, looking very happy. She said, Welcome, Alira. I replied, I will also come to visit you from now on, so you won't be so lonely anymore.
Huh. You know, that one actually turned out really nice.
Yeah, I forgot the ending when I started to tell it.
Okay, well, here's the only other story I know. It's about history, but I promise it's not too boring. So, it's 1936 and the British Empire Games are on.
It's 1936 and the British Empire Games are on. A young fit man named Harp forgot his goggles and went back to look for them in his locker. He left them in the change room, and as he looks and finds them in his locker, he turns around and sees his competitor from Japan. The Japanese competitor gets his friend that has done a sorcery class to turn Harp into Nessie the Loch Ness Monster with his black magic, because the Japanese work for the Germans. Harp then gets seen by all of the crowd waiting for the race to begin. The crowd watches a big, fat, green monster with a tail of a shark and piranha razor teeth. Everybody screams and flees at once. A small baby is left crying alone, without its parents. Monster Nessie picks up the baby and hushes it to sleep in its cradle-like arms, rocking over and over again. He puts her down sleeping. The people see that he is harmless and just wants peace. But at that very moment, the German army comes in. A soldier trips on a little child's marble. Nessie turns around and the taser gun chips some skin off Nessie. He is bleeding and falls into the Olympic pool and splashes the whole area, making a flood in the Olympic pool building. General Smith walks in with no surprise. What do we have here?
Well, General, we have a 50-meter long sea creature and your soldiers are trying to get him out, but it doesn't matter what we do, this creature has weight.
Well, think harder for this solution. My daughter is 2 times smarter than you.
Oh, yes, sir. Right away, sir. Hurry up, men. General's orders.
Nessie the monster is finally out of the pool. He gets taken to Germany to see Hitler to see what he can do. However, Harp in the Nessie body fights to get back to Berlin. He sees Hitler to stop the war, but tastes the earwaxy sweat in his moustache, and Hitler remembers his chief scientist once gave him a toxic potion, but he doesn't know what it does. He gives it to himself, Harp starts to blow up, and bop! Out comes Godzilla. Hitler turned himself into Godzilla by giving himself the potion, and destroys the British Empire's army, including USA's, Russia's, Norway's, Denmark's, Holland's, and Belgium's. Hitler, the cruel man, thinks he rules the world for eternity. But Nessie's leftovers start hovering in the air. Hitler Godzilla turns around when he hears a bang! The leftovers create a massive wave of dust surrounding the whole world like a meteor crashed into the water at 1,000 kilometers per second. Everybody wakes up and notices they have fallen to the ground, and they all shake hands, representing world peace. Hitler gets up and sees everyone happy and is so annoyed and yells, "Stop!" but in his own language. No one understands him, but they laugh and laugh because he has no clothes on.
Wow, I never knew that happened.
Yeah, I know. It's a pre- Ouch! Oh, I've stubbed my toe on this giant log. What a klutz I am.
You mean you've discovered a perfect source of wood for the campfire?
Oh yeah, that's a better way of putting it. What a genius I am.
Thanks for listening. Head to the Story Factory website for information on the authors and performers and everyone else who made this podcast. You can also find activities to go with these stories too, along with info about the organisation, how to book workshops, and how you can help with the work we do. Just go to sydneystoryfactory.org.au. See you there!